Welcome back to Windows 8 UX Design Jumpstart. This is the last session of today, nay, not the last session of our Jumpstart.
Exactly.
Today, or at this session, we're going to be covering snapping and scaling. This also includes changing orientation as well. Right. There is a lot of great information in this presentation, and it really covers one of my favorite parts about Windows 8, is the fact that it is so friendly to different screen sizes, especially from a designer and a developer standpoint. It does so much of the work for you. This ties back into that grid that we talked about, into the typography decisions and all of that great stuff. But also we're going to talk about snapping, which is something that's really special with Windows 8, and it allows users to multitask in the most elegant way possible. So let's jump into it. Windows 8 was designed for all PCs. You can see here on this screen, we have a desktop machine, we have a laptop, we have a tablet, all of these different devices that folks can use Windows 8 on. From a design perspective, that can seem like a daunting task to consider the real estate differences between all of these different screen sizes. But Windows 8 takes care of that for you. There are some decisions that you can make, and there are some custom ways that you can treat content for all of these different screen sizes, but Windows 8 has made it very simple for you to make those decisions.
Yeah, the great thing about it is there's so much built into the platform that I, as a designer, can make intelligent decisions, and
exactly.
It's easy to implement those decisions. So my app just always looks great regardless of what form factor or screen size or DPI I'm working on.
Exactly. If you do nothing, you can choose to not support larger screen sizes in any dynamic way. This is what you're going to see. Your app's going to kind of hang out there in the corner. It will remain at that 1366 by 768. However, in order to create the most dynamic and intentional presentation possible, you want folks to know that you spent time and effort, blood, sweat, tears, into designing your app for these scaled experiences. So there are some things to consider. The minimum screen size that you design Windows 8 apps for is 1024 by 768. That is a lot of, that's very familiar to a lot of web designers. Yeah. That's kind of a base unit for web designing as well. But we recommend starting at 1366 by 768. That is the size of the Photoshop templates that we're providing. Right. Again, you can go to design.windows.com. We'll also refer back to the Design Camps link, which also has links to all of these resources for you. And again, it's what your developers are going to be using straight out of the box in their templates as well.
Yeah, it's a starting point for sure. And when we talk about Snap, we'll talk about how you can get a little to get that smaller size for free as well, right?
Exactly, exactly. And as you move up in size, you can see that you get an opportunity to show more and more content. This is one way to treat adding more screen real estate. Notice that the word headlines doesn't need to get bigger.
Right.
I'm still the same size person. I don't need, my vision is still equally as good as it was at the 1366 by 768 size. And so we're able to fit way more content, more articles, more photos, more interesting things for folks to engage with. There are also a couple of orientations that Windows 8 supports. Right. We've talked about how horizontal is sort of the default.
Right.
It's how your start screen begins, and it pans horizontally, and it's just a really friendly tablet orientation. But when you're moving into portrait view, Windows 8 also supports that. You can make a decision to have your app favor portrait view or favor landscape view if you feel like it's a poor experience either way. But supporting both of those orientations, again, shows that you've been really thoughtful with the decisions when behind designing your app.
Yeah, if the user wants to use it portrait and you support it, they're going to have a great experience.
Exactly.
Right?
There are also a couple of view states that we can talk about that are, again, unique to Windows 8. The snap view state is required for every app that enters the App Store. You need to support the snap view state. And we'll talk about different really intriguing ways that you can support that snap view state, no matter what kind of content you're trying to fit over there. But essentially, the snapped state is a smaller version of your app. It's just a resized version of your app. I like to relate it to responsive web design.
Yeah.
You can go from a full site down to a mobile experience. This 320 pixel wide strip that you can park right on the edge of your screen allows for your app to keep running, and it allows for users to stay engaged with your app while they're exploring other apps. Especially if you have like a movie app is a gimme. If you have a movie app, you can the user can put that in snap view and continue to watch and engage in that movie while they're sending emails or reading other articles or things like that.
Right. I mean, create a great experience for a Snap State, and people are naturally going to do it. And
exactly.
If they have a great experience, they're going to keep your app running longer.
Exactly. Right, if you put a lot of consideration into how your content is presented in that Snap State, again, your quality and your customer loyalty is going to shine through as they use it more and more in Snap. The complement to the Snap State is the filled state.
Right.
That's that 1024 by 768 size that we referenced earlier, and so it's very familiar. There's nothing special that you need to do for this state. It's essentially the same as the full screen state, the 1366 by 768.
Right, and that's why we recommend starting there for the developers, the geeks in the audience, is that 1366 by 768, if you start designing there and then also design for a filled state, that Snap State's going to take up 320 pixels. That's automatically going to give you a good design for 1024 by 768.
Yep.
So that's kind of the guideline for where to start. And we'll talk about where you go from there. But it's a great place to start because you get both those screen sizes.
Exactly. Something else that Windows 8 considers is the fact that screens have different resolutions, different pixel densities to consider. Here you can see examples of two screens that are physically the same size. They're both 11.6 inches.
Right.
However, the pixel density is very different. On the left is that 1366 by 768, and on the right is 1920 by 1080. So you're fitting a lot more pixels within the same physical space. When you do that with traditional web design, you shrink everything. Everything gets smaller because things are really tied to pixels.
Yeah.
When we talk about a button that's 40 pixels by 40 pixels, it literally stays 40 pixels by 40 pixels. And what that can result in is a very tiny button.
Yeah.
Again, humans stay the same size. And so Windows 8 understands that this is something that is undesirable. We want to keep buttons and hit space and text all of the same size. We want to keep everything really legible and really interactable. And so it, again, tying back to that grid, it calculates exactly how that app should be displayed at that given resolution. And it compensates for that by, again, proportionally increasing the size of the elements in your app so that it looks the same no matter what resolution you're looking at. So you can see here, these two displays are presenting the same information in the same sort of physical size. However, their densities are much different. And so Windows 8 has gone to a lot of trouble to consider the best presentation for those. And what you can do from your perspective as a designer is to prepare for those situations and provide any assets that you need or design smartly and non-destructively and be prepared for whatever resolution your app's going to be presented at.
Right.
It takes a lot of the work out for you. You don't have to account for all of the new screen sizes and resolutions that come out.
Yeah, you just really need to be aware of what Windows does, and design for that. And it's going to, like you'd said, rather than having that 100 pixel by 100 pixel button
exactly.
all of a sudden get smaller, it's going to scale that for you. So just some considerations to think about.
Exactly. So getting into screen size, again, we've talked about the different devices that your app can appear on, and it's really a wonderful thing to be able to move from platform to platform and use your app. As a Windows Live user, not only is my desktop following me around and my photo and everything else is personal to me, but also my apps. I can download any of the apps that I've downloaded on my Surface to my laptop. And so I want to get that same experience, just optimized for whatever screen that I'm looking at.
Right.
So you want to, again, the minimum resolution is 1024 by 768, but you kind of want to aim for that 1366 by 768 starting place. And again, just to repeat myself, that is available as a Photoshop template that you can download from design.windows.com. And you want to make sure that you're accounting for the different screen real estates that you can encounter throughout different devices. You want to take advantage of larger screens, and you want to make sure that smaller screens flow really smoothly and that you're not missing out on anything. There are a couple of different ways that you can design for different screen sizes, and I think this this is pretty logical. What Windows 8's goal is for the adaptive style of design is to show more content.
Right.
Because you are able to see more of the screen with larger monitors, larger screens, you can also see more content.
Right.
Again, it goes back to you don't need to physically make the photos necessarily larger because the screen is larger, although you can decide to do that. But you can also decide to show more content. You
right.
can show more articles. You can show more friend activities. You can do those kinds of things through different screen sizes. The complement to that would be a fixed design. That would be a chess game, for instance. If you have a chess game on a tablet that is a certain size, you don't add more squares to a chessboard when you grow to a 27-inch monitor. Right. You simply are going to increase the size of the chessboard. Right. And so that's considering games are just a really great example of that fixed scaling.
Yeah, and again, it's going to be one of those things that comes down to the intent of your app and the scenarios for your app, and matching a strategy for dealing with different screen sizes based on what's the scenarios of your app. Like
exactly.
In Contoso Cookbook, we wanted to show more recipes and larger photos, right?
Exactly.
To draw people into the content. Mm-hmm. For a game, it might be different, where, like you had said, adding more rows and columns to a chessboard is going
right.
to dramatically change the experience.
Would make it infinitely more difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about adaptive layout in a little more depth. Here I have one of the templates that's available as a PSD. You can see that we have a really clear header. We have a promo area on the left under that group subtitle. So that's going to be a main image. And then on the right, you can see we have a list view of items that have thumbnail and text associated with them. And you can imagine that that more items under this right side would appear if you if the screen size increased. And so what you want to think about when you're organizing your content and considering how it might scale is dividing out the parts of your layout that really should scale and right. the parts that really shouldn't.
Yeah.
For instance, going back to the size of a logo or the size of a header, you really don't want to make your logo monstrously huge on a 27-inch monitor just because you want it to look really good on a Surface tablet.
Right.
And so that's one of those elements that I might decide not to scale.
Right.
That large promo image, that could also be an area that I really don't need to add more promo images to that area. I want to keep that importance right on that photo. And so I would decide to take that right area that has flowing content and add more content there. I can pull in a larger list of items specifically for that area.
Yeah, and it goes back to supporting the scenarios. And we talked about this a lot during Contoso Cookbook around what aspects of the screen, like here where you've got that header is always going to be a fixed size. And the description is always going to be a fixed size, but the list of content to the side is going to be adaptive.
Yep.
So what's going to happen when I move that from 1366 by 768 on a 10-inch monitor to, you know, a 21-inch monitor?
Yep.
Showing more of those items in a list. Just like on Contoso Cookbook on the recipe page, we have, you know, some items like the description area mm-hmm. that's fixed, and then there can be multiple reviews, so we just had that scale out. So if there's a bigger screen or more screen real estate or more reviews, we just have those adapt off to the side.
Exactly. You can use that adaptive philosophy in a few different ways. We've kind of hinted at that. When we were working on Contoso Cookbook, we had several different approaches to accounting for real estate on different screen sizes. You can show more content, which is what we've been talking about. You can feed in more tiles. You can make the content bigger, so you can fill the space. Or you can manage white space. You can leave your content the same size that it is and simply make sure that the layout is still really pleasing.
Yeah.
And we can look at those in a little more detail here. Showing more content is it's pretty obvious with a map app.
Right.
If you move from the Surface size, for instance, to a large monitor size, you want to really see more of that map. You don't necessarily want to enlarge the view.
Yeah.
Enlarging the view is another decision that you make personally.
Right.
And so you would choose to just simply show more of that map. You can also make content bigger. This is an example of the Windows Store. They have a really beautiful grid, and they want to keep that grid a certain layout, and the photography is simply provided to account for making all of the content bigger.
Right.
And so in this instance, they knew that they were going to make all of that content bigger, and so they decided that their assets would be created appropriately
right.
to be enlarged. And lastly, you can manage that white space. As I mentioned, sometimes you have a very specific goal for how your content is displayed, and you can simply let the screen grow around it and make sure that that view is still really appealing. You want to make sure that your proportions are still maintained and
right.
things like that. So let's look at Contoso Cookbook scaling. And what I'm going to do, I have a visual simulator that it comes out of Visual Studio.
Yeah.
It's a tool that I find infinitely enjoyable. It is, it's just really cool. It's another instance of my start screen here.
Yeah.
And I am able to view my app in several different scenarios.
Yeah.
Even though I'm on one screen on my laptop, I can view this app in what would be considered a Surface size. I can view it in what would be a really, 27-inch monitor size. I can even view it in different resolutions and different orientations.
Yeah.
And so for a Contoso cookbook, well, first I can show you the start screen, actually. You can see here we have three rows of tiles. And then if I move up to, I'm just going to jump right up to that 27-inch monitor size. And that jumped into Contoso Cookbook. But you can see here, now we have six rows of tiles going along the height of that. And Windows 8 has detected the size of my screen. It has reflowed that content, and it's taking advantage of that real estate. There's no wasted space here, and quite frankly, it's made my panning a little bit shorter, and so it's been a pretty great thing. For Contoso Cookbook, I can jump back down to 1366 by 768, and I'm on a mouse, by the way, so you can actually use this simulator with touch as well.
Right.
You can see my fingers now.
And if you don't have touch, another great thing about it is you can simulate touch. So
yep.
It gives you the ability to not only simulate different screen sizes, but also different aspects of the device.
Different input.
Yeah.
So in Contoso Cookbook, we had our primary featured section, and then we had our what's new activities, favorites, things like that. We had to make a decision on how to present this information. Is it more valuable to a user to see more content, or is it more valuable to a user to see larger photos?
Right.
And in a lot of instances here, we actually kind of went for both of them. We reflowed all of our content to include more tiles. You can see here under featured, we were able to add two more tiles, but our primary photo still has a priority position.
Right.
There's no confusing the hierarchy here. We were also able to fit in a couple more what's new tiles, a few more recipe tiles, and the cuisines you can see reflowed naturally with the height of the screen. So going back to our presentation. Use the templates and controls. One of the great things that we've said over and over again is that Windows 8 has tried really hard to make it as easy as possible for you to take advantage of all of these amazing features. And there are Photoshop templates available, but there are also a lot of dev templates available. You can see here on my screen that the list view control, which your developers will know what you're talking about, it's also called group view and things like that. You can see here that the template automatically adds more tiles here. So if you pulled that HTML5 template right out of Visual Studio, you can plug in some data and just about have an app as soon as you do that, because it already behaves in much the same way that it should.
Yeah, and just understanding that and kind of like we had talked about that communication between design and dev, your developers are going to crack open these templates. And I think it's the easiest way to learn. If you look at the design templates and open them in the simulator and change the orientation and change the screen size and see, like for example, the list view reflowing the content automatically, you can get a really good feel for how to design an adaptive layout or how to implement an adaptive layout within your own app. So, I mean, when I first did this, I cracked open the templates and just really looked at how they did, either in HTML or in XAML, how they laid out this content to make it reflow across different view states and across different screen sizes, and it was really, really helpful.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different templates to choose from. There are templates that flow a lot of text, like the one here. You can choose to show more text on screen. There are templates, again, that are grid view. There are templates that have different proportions, and so there are a variety of things to choose from to get ideas from there. Looking at a fixed layout example, you're taking into account the fact that some of your viewers are going to be on very large monitors. And in this instance in particular, you're going to want to understand maybe the largest monitor that you could possibly be on. And you want to create your artwork at a high resolution on that size monitor so that you can scale your assets down.
Right.
You want to maintain the most beautiful presentation possible. And Windows 8 is going to detect, that screen size, and it's going to match up the best image size for that presentation.
Yeah.
If your background is not necessarily showing on a screen that is the right proportion, say you have a Surface kind of HD style monitor, and then you're moving to a laptop that isn't necessarily quite as horizontal, then you'll get a letterboxing effect. So Windows 8, again, it wants to show your artwork in the most beautiful way possible, and so it's just going to letterbox it right into that space. I can tell you, I can show you the Cut the Rope game, which is highly addictive and super fun. I can show you that in a couple of different screen sizes here. So here you can see the cute cardboard background, the buttons, everything is really laid out beautifully. And again, if I jump extremely to that 27-inch monitor, did you see a jump there? It moved, it detected that the screen changed sizes, and it called in the right assets. Yeah. And it's still beautiful. It's the same presentation, it's the same layout, but it's a much larger monitor. Yeah. And so creating that consistency across fixed layouts is a really enjoyable experience for your users.
And we worked on Contoso Cookbook. We talked a lot about scaling for screen size versus scaling for DPI. And I know you'll talk about DPI in a second, but it's kind of like one of those things. If you supply an asset like that background in 1366 by 768 and then try and scale that up to a 27-inch monitor, obviously it's going to dither and it's going to lose fidelity.
Yeah.
Versus supplying the asset in that, whatever it's 2560 by blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And scaling that down to 1366 by 768, it's going to look right. Scaling down for screen sizes is always the way to go. And if you apply for that, or if you account for those different screen sizes, it's always going to look right because your app's going to detect it and it's going to resize it.
Exactly. And one thing that we like to kind of hark on at the Big Nerd Ranch is that you build non-destructively.
Yeah.
You want to use code as much as possible. What's great about, again, Windows 8 is that you have a lot of options to build your graphics right in the environment of Visual Studio. We handed over some PSCs to our developers just to really work through the design direction that we wanted to achieve. But then at the end of the day, they recreated those tabs and code. They brought in all of those app bar icons, their code, our WISC rating. We made that a font, and so it's super scalable. Everything is really adaptive in that app. And the only thing that really needs support is the logo and then the photos.
Yep.
And so we made sure to provide all of the right sized assets for those elements. But for the most part, we were able to recreate everything in code, which is phenomenal. It's really just, it's come a long way.
It should be the first option.
Exactly. And just pointing out the fact that if you build graphics at the right size and then scale down, they'll be much prettier. The pixel data is there to scale down, whereas if you build graphics and try to scale them up, that pixel information doesn't exist. And so you're going to get crunchy images.
Yeah, it's going to lose information.
So let's talk about flipping to portrait view. Again, Windows 8 supports portrait view. And if you can see my screen here, I have a little demo of this content reflowing right into a portrait view. So it's taking into account the fact that the orientation has changed, the margins have adjusted, anything that might have fit awkwardly in this portrait view has been adjusted.
Right.
And we're taking advantage of all of that real estate.
Right.
And I can show you an example of the Contoso Cookbook app in portrait view. And we were able to take advantage of the fact that our scaled layout really translated well into our portrait view.
Right.
It took advantage of all of that real estate and also made panning a really enjoyable experience, even in this view. Notice that I'm still panning horizontally.
Right.
In portrait view, you want to maintain that horizontal pan, unless your app really dictates that you should pan vertically.
Right.
I mentioned before that email apps often pan vertically, and that makes a lot of sense. It's a reading experience.
Yeah.
However, if you are creating a pagination experience, then obviously panning horizontal makes a lot of sense. That feels more like a book, and it also relates straight back to the start screen. You want to make sure that your app behaves consistently in portrait view. One thing that is kind of frustrating with some apps is that if you tilt the device that you're on, the menu disappears, and you have to kind of figure out how to get the menu back.
Right.
With Windows 8, all of those menus are constantly available in the same place.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure that your content and your context stays the same if you flip to portrait view as well. Again, your app can prefer portrait view if it's a better experience that way, or it can prefer landscape. Right. You can kind of lock it in either direction, or you can support both. Obviously, supporting both is going to increase your audience. Yeah. So we talked about all of these things. Do you want to speak a little to CSS media queries a little bit?
Well, I think there's a couple of things here. So if you look at the built-in templates, and like you would run in those slides are actually from the simulator, they're accounting for, just like they account for screen size, they're accounting for landscape versus portrait. So again, take a look at what they're doing in the templates. It's a good starting point. Of course, you need to design for your scenario and design for your branding. But if you look at the way that they change like margins and so on within the default templates, you're going to learn a lot on how to do this, you know, in your own app.
Exactly.
And CSS media queries and view states within XAML are your absolute best friends. You can write, you know, design for 1366 by 768, lay out all your pages, design how the layout's going to change based on either being portrait or landscape or different screen sizes, and then use, for example, media queries that can detect a view state like, am I snapped or am I portrait or am I landscape, and adjust the layout of the controls based on, you know, those different view states or orientations.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, it's media queries. It's stuff you already know from the web.
Yep.
Yeah.
So let's talk about SnapView now. Again, SnapView is a really special quality about Windows 8. It allows users to multitask. It allows them to experience two apps at the same time on their tablet. It allows your app to stay active longer. If you create a really lovely Snap experience, then folks are going to leave it open even longer. One great example would be Contoso Cookbook. If you are in the kitchen and you're preparing a recipe and you're also wanting to watch a movie at the same time, then I think that it's a really great... let me make this a little bit larger so that you can see it. This is that simulator. Then you can snap Contoso Cookbook right into the left or the right. You can see that I grabbed that app right from the top with my mouse. In Visual Simulator, it's a little easier to use a mouse because if I grab the border of the simulator with my finger, it moves it around. However, I can also kind of come up here to this top left corner, and we'll talk a lot more about this a little bit later. And I can get my travel app to appear in that filled state. And so here I can experience the Bing travel app while at the same time enjoying my Contoso Cookbook app. And what you can see here is that we have reformatted the Contoso Cookbook presentation for vertical view.
Right.
Notice that I'm panning vertically now rather than horizontally. It's a small space, it's 320 pixels. And so you want your actions to take advantage of that vertical space and remain really friendly to the vertical pan.
Yeah.
We went through every scenario. We went through the group pages, like cuisine here. We took care of the recipe pages. We made sure that everything was super logical and presented really well within that SnapView state.
Right.
And then you can just pull it right out of SnapView and you don't lose your place.
Yeah.
One of the important things about SnapView is that your context always remains the same.
Right.
You're not jarred away from an activity. You're not taken to a different page. Notice that the travel app is presented slightly differently in SnapView. It took that main promo image and it kept the importance of it. It put it at the top of the SnapView. However, the sections have been reduced to little tabs, and if I tap that tab, it'll push it right out of SnapView so that it can show me how that section is intended to be viewed.
Right. It's a great example. I mean, with Contoso Cookbook, you can use the app in SnapView. I mean,
exactly.
It's just a resized version of the app. You can still, you know, browse recipes, find recipes, write reviews, all that great stuff while you're watching a movie. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Or planning your next international vacation.
Exactly.
So like Chris said, snapping is just a resize. And so you want to evaluate your content and evaluate the way you've organized it, the priorities you put a lot of thought into when you were designing that 1366 by 768 form. And you want to just reflow it for that smaller view. There are instances where you might need to simplify a presentation and then push users out of Snap View, and we'll talk about that in a second too. But there are also some guidelines around, well, I have different kind, I have a different set of content than your recipes. Then we'll discuss a couple of different solutions to how to navigate different types of content in Snap View as well. So you want to, again, pan vertically, take advantage of that vertical space, and avoid scrolling or avoid panning horizontally, because you might accidentally grab that bar and then close your app, and that's just a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing that you can do in Snap View, and is recommended, and it's also available in all of the templates that I keep telling you about, is tailor your display of buttons, your display of fonts. Headers can decrease in size so that they're not taking up quite as much space.
Right.
Your margins change drastically because you want to take advantage of that space. And so look at the samples. Look at the examples of how Windows 8 has made decisions on the templates to adjust to Snap View and take advantage of those great ideas that have come through for them.
Yeah, have your dev team go through the templates first, because they can learn a lot from those templates. And you know, you're going to do a tailored layout for this, not only because of the vertical panel you'd mentioned not colliding with the gutter of the Snap itself, but you know, something that worked really well on full screen, you know, like our page, our hub page is, you know, three or four horizontal pans. You might want to adjust that when you go into the vertical pan of Snap, like adjust the size of elements and stuff like that, because that can become a really, really long and potentially fatiguing pan for your users. So think about those things. Do some hallway testing. You know, try your design an intentional experience for the Snap state. And yeah, it's something that just honestly just delights users. They just love using it.
Yeah, and one thing at the ranch that we kind of pride ourselves on is the fact that our UX and design team sits next to our dev team. We are constantly in communication about the app and about building the app and what are the best ways to approach providing these graphics, and the lines between doing a full-fledged design in Photoshop and then tossing it over the fence to a developer that you never talk to again. They're kind of, those days are gone. I think
we
have to consider that that it's, you know, becoming one language and understanding a little bit about how to work with your counterpart is integral, and it's super easy and it's super rewarding working in this platform.
Absolutely.
I can show you an example here of how one might treat an email in Snap View. You can see on the left we have the metadata. I'll snap that back. On the left we have the to and the from information. Then we have the main message. On the right we're looking at a people, a social network kind of aggregator here. And then if I want to push that to focus on the people app, the email app simply resizes. I didn't lose my context. I haven't closed that email. I haven't sent it accidentally. It's exactly the same as it was. It's simply resized.
Just keep working. Yeah.
Exactly. In this instance, we have email on the right, and then we have a news app on the left. And in this scenario, we might want to save this news article, but that's something that requires kind of a file picker point of view. And so if the user were to tap that save button, it would take them out of Snap View, and it would push the app that they were focused on into Snap View. And notice that, again, they did not lose focus in that email app that they had open. They're in the same place. You didn't boot them out of it.
Right.
And it's still on screen. However, now we can perform that action that we wanted to from Snap View.
Yeah. And some of the Windows 8 experiences will force that unsnap. And there might be some cases where you might want to take them out of Snap if it makes most sense to complete the scenario. Again, it is a resize, and some things will work, and most things will work. You want to design for that experience that everything can be done in a Snap state. But in some cases, like the file open picker or something specific to your app, you might unsnap it.
Exactly. So how do you design for Snap state? How do you make those decisions? How do you decide how to break down your content? There are some guidelines for that. For instance, start early. This is something that we have sort of a little bit of an inside joke. You really have a lot of planning to take care of before you start any pixel pushing on a Windows 8 app. But one of the great things about this is that you do know that you're required to submit that SNAP state, and you have the opportunity to consider a really fantastic SNAP state right from the beginning.
Yeah, start early and create a great experience.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, the Photoshop templates online are taking care of a lot of the guidelines for you. They've adjusted the margins in the Photoshop templates. You can see at the bottom that our app bar, we've lost the labels. Those commands have gotten a little bit closer together. You can see a few different types of templates that they've provided guidance for you. And you can pay attention to how the type has changed, how buttons have changed, and all of that sort of stuff. And so it's such an invaluable tool, really. Another tenet to pay attention to is identify all of your pages. So this references your page types. Yeah. We went through in our navigation section about information architecture. Right. We have several different page types that we're accounting for. We have the hub screen. We have our group pages, which is the cuisine pages or the what's new pages specifically. And then we have our detail pages, so like the recipe pages or like a profile page, those kinds of things. And so you have these page types that you need to consider how they're going to present into a Snap view.
Right.
So for Contoso Cookbook specifically, again, just breaking it down, we have the hub screen, we have the sections, so that includes the cuisines and the, for instance, the list of favorites. So you can see those are slightly different level two pages. And then on details, we have the recipe detail and then a profile detail. Again, just slightly different, but they're still level two pages and they still hearken to the same principles. And so in order to tailor each page for Snap View, you want to kind of identify the chunks of content on your screen. And like we keep mentioning, our hub really supports our core user flows. You can see the featured recipes, you can browse recipes, you can see the what's new section, so that's our social aspect, that's how we connect with our friends. And then you can see that favorite section. There are several more on that page, but you can see here that there are some core key scenarios that we want to make sure reflow properly into a Snapped view. And so what we did for Contoso Cookbook, we flipped our tabs onto the top to make them fit. We made sure that our logo is top and center there. And then we kept the prominence of the first image, that Steambum Bouse recipe, by adding the text to it. And of course, it's first in the flow. And so, of course, it's naturally where your eyes fall first. Moving down from there, none of the other recipe tiles have copy attached to them. So they don't have recipe descriptions associated with them. So you can see that's the featured recipe section. Moving on down, we have the what's new section. And what we decided to do here was limit the amount of tiles that we showed. We knew that it would get arduous panning through six tiles in each section. And so we simply limited the amount of tiles that we showed in this section. The same thing with favorites. It's clearly a different section, although our margins are a little closer together. And it's also just standing apart on its own. And there are only three tiles there. And so on, as you go through the different cuisines and other sections. On the cuisine page, you can see there are some considerations that we took into account. Our tabs, again, are on the top. Yeah. The header within that tab is a little bit smaller. Our header for the page is a little bit smaller, too, as well as that back button. Mm-hmm. We didn't want those to sort of have to start wrapping because there's such a small amount of space up there. Notice also that the margins between the sections has really been reduced as well. So we just took advantage of the real estate and reflowed our content to be super logical.
Yeah, so just taking those sections that were in a horizontal pan, stacking them, and then making adjustments to, you know, fonts and margins and stuff like that into a vertical pan. Yeah, just a couple of adjustments, and we've got those same features as far as navigation and panning to be able to get through, you know, the entire hub page or the cuisine page for this instance.
When you move your app into the Snap view, something else that you need to consider is your app bar.
Right.
There isn't a lot to consider here, although the Snap state, again, it's a resize of your filled state. And so you don't want to drastically change the options in your app bar when you move to Snap view.
Right.
The biggest differences are going to be that you'll lose the labels. So I think the plus sign says new recipe.
Right.
It no longer says that. Pin, favorite. Those lost their labels when they moved into Snap View. They also got closer together. There's less breathing room because we want to fit them within that space.
Mm-hmm.
On the cuisine pages, the same thing. We have new recipe and sort on the right. As we move into snap view, we would keep those on the right. Mm-hmm. Those are those global and persistent commands that are going to stay on the right. Even though that's been snapped, the context of those commands stays the same.
Right. And people just using your app, they're going to become less dependent on the labels as they use your app. So they won't miss them when they're in snap state. And that's another really cool thing about using the default glyphs, like the plus sign for adding new content or the up and down arrows for sort. They're going to know what those are. So if they're in a snap state, they're not going to be
lost.
There's
no guessing. Yeah. For the recipe detail page, we had a few more commands to take into account here, but we didn't want to lose any of that feature. We wanted to keep that feature parity. We didn't want to lose any features. And so notice that those commands that lived on the left in the field view, they still live on the left in the snap view. We still have space for them to live separately. Mm-hmm. And that global add recipe command, again, is on the right. What happens if you have way more than five commands? Right. You can start to wrap your commands. You can start a second row right on top of that bottom row and keep, again, the global commands towards the right, the contextual commands towards the left. And I think if you have more than 10 commands, then something might be wrong.
Right.
There are a lot of options to get your menus cleaned up, pared down with the flyout menus, with the with the controls that Chris showed us in the last session. And so really do a lot of honest studying with the content in your app bars and make sure that it's as efficient as possible, so that users don't have to thumb through several different icons and figure out what each one means and how they're different from each other.
Yeah, and a well-designed and very clear app bar is going to look awesome in a filled state, in full screen, and in snap state. And there might be some adjustments you have to make, but I mean, if you make it clear and you make it concise, it's going to work great.
Exactly. Next, we're going to talk about how to cover other snap view layouts, how to adjust content of a different bird. In this email section, you can see that email metadata is on the left. That's the to and the from, things like that. On the right is the actual content of the email. That's where you would write your email. When you move into snap view, you simply stack those two on top of each other. They are pretty consistent chunks of information. Mm-hmm. They're not going to change sizes. They're not very arduously long or things like that. So stacking those pieces makes a lot of sense. When you have a situation where we have one column at a time. Here in this email program, we have accounts and folders. We have folder content. So that's a list of emails. And then we have the actual email content. This could be a very long list. And instead of making decisions on how do I only show the latest five, how do I make decisions here on giving people access to their emails, you can simply create a pagination situation. So here at the bottom level, you have the actual email content. And then if you were to hit the back button, which we've introduced here, then you move to the next level up. And so that's the list of emails. And then the next level up from that would be your email folders. And so it's a very logical pagination. So you're really just moving through those columns one at a time, utilizing that familiar back button system. Now let's talk about pixel density in a little more detail. Again, going back to our example of the two different screens that are the same physical size, but very different resolutions. Again, talking about the fact that human fingers stay the same size. They're not necessarily going to get more accurate the smaller the buttons get. And so Windows 8 thinks about these things. It by providing graphics and instructions on which screen size you're dealing with, it adjusts.
Yeah.
And a lot of that work is actually done for you. It's a matter of turning that feature on.
No, just accounting for it. And it was something that we talked about a lot when we were looking at, you know, doing some of the earlier design camps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this concept that if I have, you know, if you go back one in the slide here, I mean, look at the difference in the size of that post button. If Windows did nothing and if I did nothing, that post button would get really, really small and hard to tap just by the fact that these two monitors are different pixel densities. So Windows does some magic that I need to know about as a designer, and I need to communicate to my developers and provide the right assets. So it can automatically scale either fixed assets or even things like this button for me.
Exactly. And so how Windows takes care of that is, as a designer, you're going to provide assets that Windows can detect and provide where it needs to provide it. And so instead of creating 1,100 different size assets of your logo, you can simply provide three. Right. And you can provide a 100% size, which is, again, going back to that 1366 by 768. You provide a 140% size, and then you provide a 180% size of your graphics. And through queries, the Windows 8 picks up exactly which graphic it needs based on the resolution density of the monitor, and it puts it in place so that your app is always looking really, really beautiful, no matter the resolution.
Yeah,
you don't get fuzzy images, you don't get fuzzy logos. Again, layouts are scaled automatically. Windows sniffs that out. It uses, again, going back to the preference of using non-destructive design.
Right.
If at all possible, you want to use CSS to style your elements.
Right.
You want to use graphics that are built in code that are going to adjust no matter what the screen size. But when you have to, provide bitmap images and follow those guidelines. There are some naming conventions that you can follow. We are all, I think, familiar with naming conventions for different types of screens, but this breaks it down pretty easily. It's .scale-100, .scale-140, .scale-180. And you want to explain a little bit about how resource loading works?
Yeah, so this is actually really, I mean, something the first time I saw this within Windows 8, and you're just like, I mean, this is just the best. I mean, this is what, as a developer, or as a designer slash developer, I really want to be able to do, is to design a great experience and then have, really, Windows do a lot of the work for me.
Exactly.
So I can create, if I do have a fixed asset, I can supply, you know, a version for the 100% pixel density, so that 135, and then as it goes up to higher densities, like the 190 or 140% and so on, it'll automatically substitute in the right asset for me. So all I have to do is supply those assets, give them the right name, and that Windows feature of automatically scaling, it's going to pick up the right asset for me.
Exactly.
Just like it's going to scale the font correctly, it's going to scale that button correctly for me as I move from, you know, 11-inch screen that's 1366 by 768 up to 11-inch screen that's 1920 by 1080, right?
Exactly. And I can show you in the visual simulator how this might look for Contoso Cookbook. Let me jump to make sure that I'm on 1366 by 768. And I can go down to this 2560 by 1440 monitor size. You can see here, it's the same physical size, but the resolution is much more dense. And so if I click on it, you'll notice that the visual simulator, at first it snapped to the current resolution, and that was what you saw in the upper left corner, but then it immediately detected that my screen size changed, and it went and pulled the correct assets.
Yeah.
And if I were to take a screenshot of this and put it into Photoshop and compare the two, you can see that it's pulled the correct assets to make sure that everything is super crisp. Even down to the Windows Live ID logo, photo, we're pulling in the right size assets there, and everything is always really beautiful no matter which screen you're looking on.
Yeah, that whisk and those people icons up in the profile, those are actually fixed assets. They look awesome regardless of what DPI I'm at. The direction, the fonts are going to scale. The Sago UI is automatically going to scale. The those rounded corners we actually did in styling within XAML, so those always look great.
Exactly.
But it's just for the fixed assets. You want to supply different versions, and Windows will swap those in for you.
Yeah, the app bar is all provided as Sago UI symbols, and so there was nothing to consider there. When you scale fonts, this again ties back to the brilliance of using Sago UI and using the Windows 8 type ramp. Again, these are going to scale super proportionately to that 140%, 180% idea. You can see that at 100%, if you will, or one times, the 20 pixel font jumps to 28 pixels at the 104 or 1.4 time size, and then that jumps to 36 pixels. And so as you move up in resolution, your font size is actually moving up as well. However, it's sticking to that grid because those sizes were chosen specifically to look super crisp and beautiful per the units, no matter what screen resolution you're at.
And then when we were talking about this earlier, it was kind of like one of those like total spoiler alerts. Like we were talking about, well, why are we dealing in units and subunits rather than dealing in pixels? And scaling and DPI are the reason why.
Exactly.
If you align everything on that 5-pixel subunit and the 20-pixel mm-hmm. unit, and deal with those font sizes that we recommend across the type ramp, everything's going to automatically align when you
exactly.
go from that, you know, 10.6 inch screen of 1366 by 768 up to 1920 by 1080. And
exactly.
again, you're going to have to do some stuff for fixed assets, but for a lot of that stuff, it's just going to happen automatically. It might seem a little bit rigid at first, but then once you learn about scaling, it mm-hmm. does a lot of the work for you.
Yeah, and it's all about creating a really beautiful, consistent experience of your app across so many different devices. You're broadening your audience infinitely by really following along with these guidelines.
Yeah.
And your app is always going to look beautiful.
Yeah, you want your app to be awesome for every single user, whether they're on a 10-inch slate or a 24-inch monitor, and this is the way to do it.
It's exactly.
More happy users.
Exactly. Yeah. So to recap quickly, we talked about several different things in this presentation. We talked about screen size, so moving from a Surface tablet to a 27-inch monitor. We talked about how you can choose an adaptive layout where you add more content, you add more blocks of photos or recipes, or you also can choose a fixed layout where you actually grow the artwork to fit the screen, and that's great for games and things like that. We also talked about orientation, about thinking about the considerations of, should your app work in portrait view?
Right.
Do you want it to support portrait view? And if so, make that a beautiful experience. You always want your app to be a really fulfilling experience, no matter what orientation, no matter what view you're in. Speaking of view states, we also talked about snap view. This is, again, a really special feature of Windows 8 that I use all of the time. And once you use Windows 8 for the first time, you learn a lot of the swiping gestures, and you get super fast at getting a couple of apps running at the same time.
Right.
And so there are a lot of design considerations that you want to kind of pick through as you're moving your content from a horizontal 1366 by 768 layout into that snap view. You should make decisions on how to display that content, how to maintain feature parity between the two, and just make sure that your viewers are not thrown out of context when they go into snap view. And then we talked about pixel density. We talked about how Windows 8 really accounts for the resolution of the screen that you're looking at. It pulls the right assets at the right size as long as you're providing those right assets. And again, it's important to also remember to try and design, again, this is another reason to sit next to your developer and really get to know them. Design as much as you can so that they can create as much as they can in code.
Yeah. But
also when you need to provide assets like logos, photos, things like that, you're providing those in the 100, 140, and then 180% versions. And then, of course, typography is going to scale proportionally with that grid, and it all ties back to those units and subunits, which really underscores the purpose of following that Windows 8 guideline.
Perfect.
So that's the end of day one, and if you'll show my screen real quick, we can show you the agenda for day two, which is going to be tomorrow. We're going to first wake up and walk through charms, contracts, and extensions, which is going to go into a lot of detail and uncover a lot of the mystery behind plugging into that one language that Windows 8 uses. Next, we'll talk about tiles and notifications, creating a really personable experience right from the start screen for your app and getting users engaged before they even open your app. Then we'll talk through the touch and animation languages of Windows 8. We've covered a lot of that already and what we've gone through today, but also we're going to go into more detail about what is available to you as a designer and as a developer to create a custom experience. We're going to go over why those considerations are important, and we're going to point out just how they make a better user experience and a more intuitive experience overall. Then we're going to eat food, and then we'll go over accessibility and globalization. Accessibility is close to my heart. I used to work on a website where it was extremely important. It was a health website, and so folks really needed to be able to use that website no matter what disability they may have come, because they're trying to get health information for their condition. And it really opened my eyes to the importance of it, but also the ease of access for folks that are power users, for folks that 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 simply want to experience Windows 8 in a way other than touch.
Yeah.
And then globalization, of course, is going to talk about how to take advantage of the huge Windows world that we live in today.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, the marketplace is, you know, over, what, 200 countries, you know, being able to access that and get that market is going to be a great opportunity.
Exactly. And then after that, we'll talk about the Windows Store, and that's going to open up a lot of opportunities for your app to make money. It'll talk through the ease of submission. Again, Windows has tried to make it super easy and positive to get an app into this space.
Right.
There are a lot of tools that you can use to both check for accessibility, for globalization,
right.
To check for whether you've met all of the requirements,
right.
and so, but also how to make money if you want to do that with your app, which I think is probably a lot of our goals.
Yeah, we all want to be successful, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that was day one. Obviously, there's lots that we're going to cover tomorrow and day two, so we hope to see you. Well, for us, bright and early in the morning tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. But wherever you are in the world, I hope you'll join us for day two. And we'll keep marching along and kind of going through the design of the Kotoso Cookbook app and kind of explaining to you the guidelines and how to implement them when you create your own Windows 8 app.
So. Exactly. See you tomorrow.
See ya.